I just want to do God's will.
The kind of revolution that the world needs is a Christian revolution.
If you want a miracle, you've got to expect it to happen.
You're the recipients of God's grace and God's blessings, and you rejoice in that reality.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Life Today Live. Jordan Brink Schroeder here. Great to be live, you guys, today. Thanks for joining us. Hey, you know just as well as I do that as Christians, we go through a lot of trials that contribute to our testimony. And sometimes those trials really shake us, and they just leave us feeling damaged and destroyed. But God wants to offer you healing and restoration today, and our author today knows all about that. Our author today, Stacy Kay, she is the author of Damaged Goods, a devotional for the slightly imperfect. I'm super excited to welcome our author today. Stacy, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Could you take us back to just one moment to where you felt damaged? I mean, how did you get the title for this book? Because a lot of times we can feel broken, hurt, depressed, but damaged. I mean, that is a big word.
So for me, I really, it's interesting. I was writing the book and I'd been thinking about what I could title it. And I was thinking about, you know, slightly imperfect, things like that. And I was in the grocery store and I saw some, you know, of the cans that were dented and they said that they were just damaged. And I thought, you know, that's really a good word for how, you know, how I felt many times, you know, as I was going through some of the things that I shared in the book. And I think, you know, you can be damaged, you can be, you know, not perfect, but still be used by God. And I thought that that was kind of the important point. And so I that's how I kind of keyed in on that for the title.
That is awesome. And it's hilarious to me because as soon as I read this, it literally brought me to the grocery store because that is one of my absolute favorite things to do. Even during COVID, you know, we couldn't do a lot, but we can go to the grocery store. And one of the most disappointing things is when you're going and you have a recipe for everything, but then you get to the produce and everything is either ripe or damaged or, you know, whatever. You see this apple and you're like, there is no hope for this little guy. He's bruised. We got to take it off the shelf, right? And a lot of times we think of ourselves in that way of there is no restoration. There is no hope for us. What's the first moment that you kind of felt that way about yourself?
I think probably when I got divorced, when I was starting to go through that process, I had been through emotional and physical abuse. And some of, you know, I really felt completely broken at that point. That's probably the lowest I've ever felt in my life because, one, I didn't ever want to be divorced. I was raised that people don't, you know, Christians don't get divorced. And so I was really the first person in my family to go through that. And so I didn't like that particular part of it. But even more than that, I just believed all the things that he had told me about myself. And so I feeling that low and just feeling like I was so unlovable and just ugly and nobody could ever love me again. And I just felt completely worthless. And that was the lowest point.
My heart goes out to you. And, you know, my parents are divorced and I've spoken with my mom just about how that made her feel. And to be able to hear, you know, her sentiments about it is exactly what you're saying, you know. And so in your divorce, was it something that you saw was coming for a while, quite a long time, or was it something that was just an immediate shock?
So I was shocked because he just came home one day and just sat down and said, I don't want to be married to you anymore. And I was 7 months pregnant with our second child. And I just, you know, I had been really focused. I talk about it in my book that my daughter had gone through an illness and I had really focused really in on her and helping her heal. And I think that I put the marriage, you know, on the back burner because of that. And so that's maybe why it hit me as a shock. But then, you know, I had the abuse going on. It's not like we got along a lot. So in hindsight, I probably should have seen some of the signs that I missed. But I really was surprised in the moment. I was very surprised.
My heart just goes out to you. And thank you so much for sharing about that. And like, man, there's just no words for somebody that has endured so much. And not only are you enduring that abuse and that pain, but then you're also caring for your daughter. And so sometimes we can kind of get tunnel vision when we're caring mm-hmm. for something that we love so much. And so how did walking through that divorce go? Did you get resentful towards God? What were your feelings towards him?
God was my only lifeline through all of it. Mm-hmm. And that is really what grew and deepened my faith. I really think, you know, I had come to Jesus at a very young age, but having that deeper relationship did not really happen until I started going through all of these things. And he really just showed up for me. And in all of the things that I went through, you know, I feel like when you're alone and you have nobody else, and the only thing that you have is your faith, and all you have is God, that's when your faith really grows and really strengthens. And I wouldn't have gotten through it without him. I mean, sure, there were times that I got angry, I got frustrated. I'm human, just like everybody else. But in the end, I always go back to my roots. I always go back to the Bible, and I always read and pray and go back to that relationship, because that's the only thing that I feel like really got me through all of the things that I went through.
You talk about your roots. Did you grow up in church? Were you really involved as a kid, or, you know, when did your relationship with Christ start?
So yes, I grew up in church. We were there every time the doors opened, every Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. So, and I even helped on the bus ministry on Saturdays. And so, yes, I was always in church, and we were always, that was central to our home life. We talked about it, and my parents, you know, we were active. We didn't just go to church, you know, we talked about it, and we believed it and we lived it. So that, but you know, just like all teenagers, you kind of go off and you kind of do your own thing, and you just kind of get away from God and get away from the things that you're supposed to be doing. And I think there's this, I'm the mom of four children. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of noticed that as your kids grow and they get older, they start this natural separation around the time they're junior, senior year. And I think that's really God's provision for us to be able to handle them moving away, because we kind of want them to leave by the time they go, right? Because they get to that point that they're so difficult to live with. And so I think there's this natural separation or whatever. And so I was going through all of that myself as a teenager, wanting to get out. I was in this tiny little town, and everybody knew everything about everybody. It was very gossipy. Mm-hmm. And I share in the book that I got pregnant right out of high school. And, you know, what happened then really shaped a lot of what was going, you know, what happened in, you know, down the road, because obviously I got married. We had wanted to get married, but we kind of moved up our timeline. We went ahead and got married. And then the church's reaction to what happened really kind of shifted my focus away from religion and away from church, and shifted it onto relationship and onto God, because that's where the support was. That's mm-hmm. where, you know, God showed up, where the people did not show up for me, but God did.
In what ways did they not show up for you? Because you talk about, you know, it really pushed you to lean into that relationship with God. I think a lot of us has been hurt by the church. And so how did that work? How did you navigate those feelings of, these are the people that are supposed to be here for me, that are supposed to support me and lead me closer to the Christ? Was that something mm-hmm. that they did, or how did they operate in reacting to the news that you shared with them?
So that was really the impetus for a lot of my feelings about organized religion and everything for a very long time, because no one from my church even came to visit me. I didn't get a call from my pastor, my youth pastor, my Sunday school teacher. Nobody came over. You know, the only people that came to see me were some friends and family, and they basically told me they were disappointed in me and, you know, all of the things. And it was really a strange time. My family, I love them dearly and they love me, but they were not speaking to me at that moment. You know, they were really hurt and they were dealing with everything that was going on. And so I really was alone. And mm-hmm. so for a long time, I did not go back to that church. In fact, for many, many, many years, and the only times I've really gone back is when my mom has asked me to go with her or something. And I don't care now. I would go now. It's not a big deal. But for many years, I went to other churches. I've always been a part of a church family. There were times, you know, when I went through my marriage and divorce that I was not in church, but I was still in my Bible. I was still having my relationship with God. And then once I got past that, then I got back into church. So it was, you know, a strange time, and I had to really grapple with, you know, do I want to be part of a body of believers? Do I want to be part of organized religion? I still love God. I still believe in Jesus, but that doesn't mean that I want to be part of a church. And so I really had to go through that. But the Bible is very clear that we are to be a member of a Bible teaching church. And, you know, just because one church didn't treat me, you know, the way that they should have, doesn't mean that would happen again. And even if it does, churches are made of humans. We're imperfect. So, you know, things are not always going to go the way. So when people say they've been hurt by the church, you know, probably everybody, if you've made a mistake, you've probably been hurt by the church, because they probably have not reacted the way you wanted them to or you expected them to. But that doesn't mean that you just give up on church and that you just never go back. I just don't think that that's the way that Jesus would want us to be.
That is so good. And you brought up an amazing point is, you know, if you're in the church, you've probably been hurt by the church. And if you haven't, then maybe take into consideration, are you active in the church? You know, because when we have relationships with people, even in our daily lives, you know, people that we love and we really care about, sometimes we have interactions with them that are not so pleasant, you know? And if we're really in the family of Christ, we fight with our family members, and it's like, yeah, that's to be expected, you know? But we expect to go to church and to just receive this royal treatment of nothing will ever go wrong. Nobody will ever be, you know, harsh to me, which I'm so sorry that you went through that. And obviously that's not what we want to represent as the body of believers, but we also probably have just a very wrong preconceived notion of what family is, right? And so, but thank you so much for sharing about, you know, what you went through as a teenager. Do you think that it's possible that, you know, with the way that you were treated by your family and the people in the church, that that's possibly where those feelings of feeling damaged could have originated?
I'm sure that that had something to do with it. I mean, I was a kid myself. I was 18 years old and just, you know, starting off getting married, having a baby, and, you know, kind of starting my own life. And so, you know, I was a baby raising a baby. I made lots of mistakes but so there definitely could be part of it. At that point, I didn't feel damaged. It was such a weird time because on the one hand, I felt horrible. I was so sad that I had embarrassed my family and that I had hurt my family and my friends. But I also was so excited to start my life because, you know, I already thought that this man was the perfect guy for me, that we were going to start our family and, you know, we were going off to school and doing our thing and just, we were just going to, you know, never look back. And so while I didn't like the way that it happened, I thought, okay, I'm just going to go a couple of years earlier than I anticipated. So it was really a shock to me. And so I never really considered that part to your question, but I really remember it more after going through those years of just, you know, hearing over and over again about how dumb I was and how, you know, unlovable, all the things that you hear from somebody who's trying to control you. And I have been talking to a lot of women, it's interesting, lately have come into my life that are kind of going through similar situations, and it's hard to see because I see them grappling with trying to, you know, I shouldn't get divorced because I'm, you know, I'm a God-fearing Christian and I shouldn't be divorced. But they're also like, they want approval for everything from their husbands because they're so controlling. And they don't understand that this control starts so minor, you know, it starts minor and you don't understand it until you're kind of like under the thumb. And then all of a sudden you kind of have this epiphany, like, how did I get here?
Right.
How did I get from having this normal relationship where we're kind of on equal footing to how did that become, okay, I've got to submit. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I have no voice and I'm completely under his thumb and whatever, I don't even trust myself to make a decision anymore.
Right. and how could God, how could this be God's best for me? Like, how is this feeling God's love for me? Yeah.
Right.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. In your marriage, when did things start to take a turn? Because you said, is this the same man that you had your first child with?
Yes. My first two children are from my first marriage. And I have happily been married for 31 years. We have two more kids.
We love that.
Six grandkids and two more on the way. So it has a happy ending.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I don't really remember when it started. It kind of, we got married and we're going along our way. And then at some point he just started, the arguments escalated. And as they escalated, he would tell me that women are to be seen and not heard, and I'm not to talk. And and it was funny, 'cause I know, and I'm not the person to say that to. So that would really escalate things because, he's like 6'1" and I'm like 5'2" and I'd be looking up at him and—
But you're like,
and,
I am not the one to mess with. I'm not the one.
Right. I was this little bitty 90-pound thing, like just yelling at him and telling him what I thought. And so that's really what escalated it. And it was difficult. I mean, even in my family did not know all of what was going on until I told them. But even my own dad, and I know that he's from a different generation, but he told me that I emasculated my husband and made him feel like less than a man, and that's why he was abusive towards me. Well, that's not what we tell our young women. That's not right. I don't care if I made him feel that way. He's an adult, and if he feels that way, he needs to handle his feelings, not with his hands or, with his other words or something. So anyway, that's just kind of some of the thoughts I think that people have about, sometimes women, how they should behave and how they should submit. And I'm not saying they shouldn't submit, but there's another part of that about the way that the husband is also supposed to behave. So it's not, you can't throw up one side without bringing in the other.
We have to tell the whole story, guys.
Right.
The whole
exactly.
story. I love that. And so I'm engaged to be married, and it was very stressful for me. I honestly had a breakdown a little bit crying to my mom because, when your parents are divorced and my grandparents were divorced, you see this line of repetition, right? And unfortunately, they were all from abuse. And I love my fiance very much. I obviously, when you get married to somebody, you don't see them. Nobody thinks, oh yeah, I think that this person is going to be abusive one day, right?
Right.
But there was so much pressure because I was just like, oh my goodness, like I don't want to get divorced as well. Like I don't have everything together. I'm not the perfect person. There's so many things I need to fix about myself before I become married. And so I think we have a lot of myths and lies in our head about what marriage is. And so how do you have confrontation with your spouse in a biblical way, right? Because there are going to be times where your husband says things that are disrespectful or when you say things that like, girl, you shouldn't have said that. You know what I mean? I know right. I always catch myself doing that. But where is the line of, we can have healthy confrontation and we can still honor the Lord with our relationship. And where does it blur into, this is kind of getting abusive. This is abusive. How do we see those warning signs? And how do we sometimes save ourselves and save our spouse, save our marriage from hopefully going through that?
Well, I think that the most important thing is to have a marriage that's rooted in Christ. Mm-hmm. And I think praying together and reading your Bible together but doing Bible studies, things like that, I think are so important. I didn't have that in my first marriage. And I think that that was a real key because I thought he was a Christian. He had gone to church as a child. And I believed that he was a Christian. And then I found out later that he was not the Christian in the sense that I believed.
Right.
So, in fact, when our youngest, when our son was saved and went and told his dad, he was all excited, he was getting baptized. His dad told him, there's no heaven, there's no hell. That's just what your mom's telling you to control you. So those kinds of things. Right. And so but that didn't come out until after we were married. And he started, he refused to go to church and he refused to, really have any part of that. And then I just kind of saw a whole different, switch, flipped in there. But I do think that to have a healthy marriage, that God has to be in the center of it. And I think that makes all the difference, because if he truly is, then yeah, there's still going to be times that you get a little out of hand, but there's forgiveness. And we say, I'm sorry. And we move forward and we learn from our mistakes. It's when we don't learn from them and we just keep repeating the same cycles and we don't have, you know, that connection of Christ in our marriage. I think that's what really sinks it from the beginning.
Yeah, thank you so much for clarifying and sharing all of that, because I think a huge part of that as well is making sure that you have wise counsel in your marriage. You know how you were speaking about earlier of, you know, sometimes we take ourselves out of church for certain reasons, but that's not God's best for us, right? He wants us to be a part of the body of believers. And part of that is to be able to say, hey, I'm struggling in my marriage in this way, or I'm struggling just as a woman in this way, and being able to connect with other women who have gone through similar things and to hear the wisdom that the Lord has imparted to them and now they're imparting to us, and then we get to be a part of that chain reaction, is such a beautiful thing. And so have you been able to be a part of that with your husband now, your new husband?
You'll have to forgive me. I'm having an allergy attack, and so I may start coughing.
Oh, you're so fine. I'm sorry. But It's the cedar.
But yes, so we have been part of a church. We have taught together. We do studies together. We fellowship with other Christians together. And I think that's made all the difference for us.
That's
sorry.
Oh, no, you're so fine. You're so fine. You know, it's been really awesome. I second what Stacy has said, because there was a time for me that I had to step away from the church, and I was dealing with a ton of church hurt when I was a teenager, figuring out why my parents had divorced so many years ago. And that was a really difficult thing to walk through. And as I resubmerged myself into the body of Christ, I saw so much fruit coming from that obedience. And I think that there's been a lot of times where I've been half obedient in my life of, oh, I'm, you know, reading the Bible and I'm having quiet time, I'm having devotion, I'm having the relationship with the Lord, but I'm not having that relationship with other believers and joining, you know, with them and learning from them. And so, you know, I think it's really, really important to note that. And then also the fact of, I love something that you talk about, Stacy, is that the trap of busyness. When you were walking through this healing season, navigating so many things, you know, your daughter being sick, walking through this divorce, you know, obviously healing isn't linear, but was busyness something that kind of hindered part of your healing?
Yes, I think it's really easy. And I think that's a favorite thing for Satan to do, is to get us off track and get us busy, even with good work. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be serving in your church, you can be helping with charities, you can be doing all the things. And then all of a sudden, you don't have time for your quiet time, you don't have time for your prayer life. And that really, and then all of a sudden you look back, you're going through something and you're like, oh my goodness, I haven't prayed in a week. I haven't really come to the Lord and talked to the Lord in ages, and I'm so far away from him. So absolutely, that is definitely a trick, I think, of the devil.
Yeah, absolutely. And I heard a saying recently that if the devil can't make you sin, he'll make you busy, because it's the most amazing distraction, because you don't even see it coming, right? And I love how you said, even in good works, you know, mm-hmm. we just push everything else, our quiet time with the Lord, off to the side, because we're like, well, we're doing really good things for ourselves. We're doing really good things for the kingdom. I'm serving at church. And something that the Lord has shared with me recently is I love to do my quiet time, but I kind of prefer to sometimes do it in the afternoon. But then I would be having these chaotic mornings, and I'm like, Lord, why am I having chaotic mornings? And this is just a specific word for me that I'd love to share, is he was like, in your tithes, because I said, how important is it that I really start my morning off with this? You know, I talk with you, but I'm really getting in and studying. How important is it, the time of day? And he said, Jordan, do you give your first 10% in your tithe, or do you give your last 10%? Do you give once everything, you've accounted for everything in your budget and in your needs, or do you give out of faith and you go? And so that's just something that's helped me with my spiritual discipline. And I'm not saying everybody has to start off that way, But that's something that the Lord has put on my heart, because I realized that I was just pushing things off, pushing off amazing devotionals like yours, you know, mm-hmm. until the middle of the day, and just getting to where it was convenient and not to when it was a discipline and not to when it was a submission to the Lord, you know. And so I think it's so awesome of being able to cut off the ties of busyness, being able to recognize it and see that this is a distraction from the enemy. Stacy, yeah. I love how you talk about God's redemption, that we don't have to stay damaged, but he redeems us. And what is the biggest thing that you've been able to impart to your children or women going through a similar situation that you've been in?
I think just to remember who they are and whose they are, to remember that they're a daughter of the King, and he created them, you know, and he knows every hair on your head. He knows you specifically, and he sees you, and he loves you. And, you know, because sometimes we see our faults and we focus so far in on our faults that we don't even love ourselves anymore. So I think they need to remember that no matter what they've done, no matter where they've gone, they're not going to get far enough away that they're going to outrun God's love for them. Mm-hmm. And we just have to, you know, Satan, another tool he uses is us not forgiving ourselves, because mm-hmm. God forgives us, but we don't forgive ourselves. And we just keep reliving it and rehashing it, going back and forth. And so I think we have to be able to do that, forgive ourselves and move forward and understand that even though we've made those mistakes, that God still loves us and he still wants to use us. So let go of it and let God use you to help others.
Mm. That's beautiful. Let go of it and let God use you to help others. Stacy, thank you so much for being with us on the program today. Where can our viewers get connected with you?
So I have a website, stacykbooks.com. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram with Stacy K Books. Everything's under Stacy K Books.
Amazing. And here is her website here. And make sure that you go out and you get Damaged Goods, a devotional for the slightly imperfect. Guys, thank you so much for joining us today on Life Today Live. Make sure you like, comment, and subscribe if you haven't already. And we will see you next week on Life Today Live.
Wouldn't you say with the Lord, I confess my sin. No longer will I rely upon my goodness, upon my personality, but Lord, I just come as a bankrupt sinner, saying, Lord, have mercy on me.